From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Good evening. I am Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida, and it's a pleasure to have everyone here. My producer, Brian Charlson, is not with us this evening. He is off at a formal dinner this evening. Now, I trust he's enjoying his rabbit chicken and making exciting speeches. Steve Bauer is here doing his usual wonderful job of recording Tuesday Topics and will then be responsible for editing it and turning it into the very listenable program it becomes under his ministration. So thank you very much for your help, Steve Bauer. And also, of course, we wish to express our appreciation to George Buys, whose software company has made this software available to us and therefore has made this program possible. Thank you very much, George. This evening we're going to discuss a phenomenon that I've always thought had the potential to be wonderful for people who are blind. I have always lurked at the periphery of this topic. That is, I've occasionally dabbled, and I've certainly put my feet into the pool, but I would not regard myself as a person who has spent huge amounts of time and made lots and lots of efforts on a regular basis to be an online shopper. Perhaps one of the questions we'll explore later on is what makes those of us who do online shopping on a really regular basis online shoppers, and what makes some of the rest of us not such avid users of online shopping. For the first half of our program, we actually have four folks who have agreed to kind of be guinea pigs and talk a little bit about their experience as online shoppers. And it's sort of like the beginning of a 12-step program when I ask for volunteers. You know, people say, well, I've been an online shopper since the days of Genie and the days of CompuServe, and take me back to the days when I was, of course, first getting online. But there is a degree of almost, I suppose the word is, a combination of pride and, there's a hint of defiance there, I think. I'm going to start off with a lady who signed on as Mary from California. Mary didn't tell us what her last name is, but she does indicate that she's been an online shopper. And one of the things that led me to ask her to be first is because of what she said to begin with. She gave an absolutely perfect rationale for online shopping that really is what makes online shopping so attractive to people who are blind. And Mary, if you would, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your online shopping experience. Where do you buy from? But also, talk to us about the rationale that you talked about and a little bit about perhaps how well it's worked out for you. So over to Mary from California.
Well, hi, everybody. This is Mary Emerson from California. I've been an online shopper for, it seems like, for two decades, but not quite that long. I was on Genie, CompuServe, Delphi. I don't know what else had online shopping, but I was on them. And I do it because I don't have a lot of sighted help here, and I also have family out of state. They don't live here at all, and I see them maybe every few years. And so online shopping is an absolute necessity for me. I shop for clothes online through Blair.com. I just this morning shopped for my sister's Christmas box from SwissColony.com. I have a grocery store a couple of miles from here, and they deliver, so I go to Safeway.com and get stuff from there every couple of weeks. And it's just a great way to do things, to get things that you need. Of course, if you're going to buy stuff like clothes, you have to know the colors and what looks good on you and the sizes so you can get everything right. I just had a great time with it. It just really opened a lot of doors for me when I started shopping, especially on CompuServe, because they had an amazing bunch of stores. And I just had a great time with that.
Another person who is well known to some of us anyway, and who's certainly been around computers for a fairly long time, is Doug Wakefield. And Doug also indicates that he's an inveterate online shopper. Doug, what are the kinds of places that you frequent these days? And maybe you could begin the process of talking a little about the other side of the coin by talking to us perhaps a little about some of your frustrations shopping online.
Thanks, Paul. Doug Wakefield here. I, too, have been using online shopping since CompuServe. My wife Judy and I were just trying to remember, I think what they had the electronic mall, and they also had, I think it was called Shopper's Advantage. But we've gotten into it really, really big time. All you have to do is look at the rubbish that goes out every week and the number of boxes, because everything comes by UPS or FedEx. There are certain necessities. We use drugstore.com. We don't do prescriptions, although I do know people who do prescriptions online. But we do use drugstore.com all the time. Every week, this is how we do our grocery shopping. We have a grocery store within a block and a half. You risk when you go there. You take your chances. What you brought home isn't necessarily what you ask for, because sometimes English is not exactly the people's first language, and they just don't know what the items are. So we use something called Peapod. I think it's countrywide, but here it's linked with Giant. And so we do at least once a week a $50 to $100 order of grocery. Clothing, yeah, I was so pleased to find out that I finally found a shoe brand that I liked. I know the size, and I can order shoes. There's all kinds of stuff. It's just how I shop. Frustration. I'll tell you the biggest frustration. The biggest frustration is, and I hit this on HP one, you go to buy some things, everything's going fine, you've got it in the cart, you're all ready to check out, and the submit button will not work. Come hell or high water, you cannot get that submit button to activate. And as a matter of fact, with any screen reader, it doesn't even recognize it when you tab. You tab right past it. If you use an arrow key, you can go up and down. Sure enough, there's the button, but you can't press it. The other frustration sometimes is just a huge amount of graphics that make it very difficult to find what you're looking for. Peapod, for example, takes a lot of practice, because it's an ugly screen, and I've showed it to several people with 20/20, and everybody, we just don't understand how they keep it this way. It comes up with 15 frames every time a page loads. It has all kinds of graphics for up arrow and down arrow, increase amount, decrease amount, and somebody could make the argument, that's an inaccessible site. But Judy and I order every week, and what we order comes, so we can't say it's inaccessible. We could say it's extremely difficult. And I guess what it comes down to is, as Mary would probably agree, it's how motivated you are. If this is how you're going to do it, you got to be patient and do it. If you can too easily pick up the phone and call somebody and say, hey, could you run me over to the drugstore and go in with me for a minute? That's just not my style, but some people would much rather do that than wait the time. Other people, of course, sighted people, stop on the way home from work. Not our choice.
Thank you, sir. Another of our inveterate online shoppers is somebody who may be known to some of us as a longtime editor of the magazine of online gaming, a magazine called Odyssey. His name is Michael Fair, and he's from our sister nation of Canada. And Michael, tell us a little about your online experience and some of the places you're buying from these days. Talk for a minute, if you would, also about whether foreign exchange is an issue. And finally, if you would, tell us a little bit about some of your frustrating experiences.
I'm Mike Fair from Canada, Mississauga, Ontario, to be precise. I guess I started online shopping I missed out on the really early days of it, although I was a CompuServe member back then. But I didn't really have my own credit card for a while, and at that time it was much, much easier to do once you had your own credit card. And I got that a bit later in life, and started, I guess, I had Windows. I had Windows 98, no, it must have been Windows ME. I think I started then. So it was fairly late, 98, 99-ish, when I got into online shopping. And I think what really started me into it was the games, because to get a lot of these companies that make accessible games, you can download them online. And same with a lot of audio dramas. There are things that you just can't get in retail stores, and they just don't, they're not popular enough to demand the shelf space. And thankfully, the internet gives these things a second chance at commercial life. So we have things you'll find on the internet that are being sold that you couldn't have re-commercialized, like interactive fiction. Most of the accessible games, you pretty much have to go online to get those. There are a few exceptions, but not many. Audio dramas, tons of those out there. A good favorite place, ZBSAudio.com is, or it might be .org, great place in the U.S. Now, in terms of buying things, we basically moved into an apartment. My ex-wife and I were basically buying our groceries online. So there's a shop around here called GroceryGateway.com that is fairly extensive in the Greater Toronto area in Canada, and it was quite easy to use, very accessible. You could just order up your groceries, and they'd come in boxes. A delivery guy would come and help deliver them, help you put stuff away if they had time. Real nice bunch. Never really had a problem with it, just a bit more pricey. You probably paid, you know, delivery fee and some of the prices a lot of people felt were a little higher. But the exchange was you could take your own time, shop at your own pace. You could take all the time to browse, to look around. You don't have any people sort of putting their agenda on your shopping trip. And you can just do everything independently and get everything there, put it where you know where it is, get people to tell you what it is, and basically make sure everything's where you're going to be able to find it. So there are a lot of advantages for that bit of extra money that you spend. And so we did that for about 5 years, basically. Every week, about $100 and some odd. We tried to make it so we only had to order every 2 weeks. Spent, roughly $100 to $200 every order. Now, foreign exchange rate, one thing that can get you is if you get things delivered by post, that is actual physical items, you can get dinged with customs and duties and things. If you're not cognizant of that, it can surprise you. I've had that happen a few times recently, and it's manageable. Just, budget an extra little bit just in case that happens if you're ordering things. I've, of course, recently been ordering some Christmas gifts, and since our Canadian dollar is now actually somewhat higher than your U.S. dollar, very strange state of affairs for us Canadians, eh? We're not used to this. I decided to order some stuff from the U.S., and I seem to be able to do it without getting dinged by the postage and the post office customs and things. But other times it'll get you, and you pay a little extra for the shipping. Now, if you're buying digital goods, of course that's not a concern because you're just downloading. There's no shipping as such. So you're just downloading things like MP3s. I get my music from mp3fiesta.com. It's a really good place, very accessible. And that's the other thing with these online shops. You can vote with your feet, with your cybernetic feet. If you don't like how one store does it, look around. Chances are you can find another one. Not always. You don't always have a choice, but a lot of times you do. It pays to look around for that.
Thank you very much, Michael. As usual, a very comprehensive answer to the question and just what I was looking for. From Boston, Massachusetts, we have another member of our panel, Micah Piccola. And Micah, maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of the things that you're buying these days and some of your experiences, but perhaps you could also begin to talk with us a little bit about something that Michael raised, and let's see if we can carry this a little further. One of the things that Michael said is you can vote with your feet. That is, you can go to another store if you don't like the one you're shopping at the moment. How do you vote with your feet? How do you find out what's available online? Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the process of discovering places. Well, thank you, Paul, and good evening. As I said before the show, I've been shopping online for quite a while, but I'll just dive right into the present tense since hopefully that'll be a little more useful to people. I'd say over the last couple of years, I've mainly been using drugstore.com and more, and even somewhat replacing that, Amazon.com. I'm signed up with something called Amazon Prime, where you pay about $80 for a year, and with that you get free two-day shipping and overnight shipping for about $4, give or take. Well, sometimes take, it's a little bit less on some items. But I'm finding more and more that a large number of things that I want or need to get are available through Amazon, and quite often, though not all the time, they have the best price on the item, and usually they ship things out very quickly. Again, either the two-day, which is free with the Amazon Prime, or if you really need something, you can get it overnight. And in fact, they're just launching something in certain markets called Local Express Delivery, where you can even get it the same day. Now, in addition to the typical things that people kind of know Amazon for, I also use Amazon.com/grocery quite a bit. You could kind of think of it as an online Costco. And in fact, last weekend, I discovered they have a program where if you order an item on a subscription, like every between 1, 2, 3, and 6 months, you can save an additional 15%. So I just started doing that with a couple of items that I get frequently. They do, on Amazon, pretty much sell everything in bulk, so you kind of have to keep that in mind. I've put off getting paper towels, for instance, because they'll send you 32 rolls, and I don't know where I would keep them in this small apartment. But it is a better price than the one, for instance, I was getting on drugstore. And as far as checking various sites, you know, if I'm looking for a particular item, I would pretty much start with Google, or there's Deal Time and Price Grabber. I don't really have a favorite one. Maybe somebody else knows a little bit about that. I also have a blog and a website where, as I told you over email, in the last week or so I've been kind of collecting coupons and kind of best deals. So that website is dcnightout.com, and I'll post them there just in case anybody wants to go there maybe tomorrow or in the next couple of days. And for instance, I found a good fragrance site that has the L'Octane, I know I'm pronouncing that wrong, but it's the French company that has Braille labels for everything. And I just got some of their products today from a very nice e-commerce website. But I think that's a good example of kind of what you were getting at. You know, I really felt good buying products from that company that has the labels in Braille. And I think the main thing with online shopping for me is that you can read the descriptions of the items in depth and reviews, and that's not always really possible either in a store from the personnel that are there or if you go with your friends. I know right before Thanksgiving I went into Macy's, to the store itself, to try to find a bar set to bring over to a party that a friend of mine was having, and it took 4 people to find that particular area, and then eventually they found 2 sets. And but Amazon again had a better selection and a lower price. So hopefully that answers a little bit of what you were asking. I can certainly follow up, but I hope that was helpful.
It absolutely was. Thank you, sir. Let's spend a little bit of time on finding websites. You mentioned Google, and in my email announcing online shopping, I talked about both Google and Frugal as possible places to begin one's search for online stores. Who would like to jump in and talk a little bit about using those two things, or the one that you talked about, Michaela, too, the price whatever is not something I'm familiar with. What are the advantages of using things like these, and what are the disadvantages?
All right, I'll handle Google. That's the one I use for this kind of thing. And there are a couple things to do with that. First of all, if there's literally anything you need, go to Google. I've never found a simpler search engine. I love Google. It's really been great for me. Just type in whatever you're interested in, and it'll even correct your spelling. If your spelling's slightly off, it'll have a link that'll come up and go, did you mean whatever you might have misspelled? So you can't really, I don't think, get too much better than that. It's really been great. And most times when you type in something you want, talking clock or just an idea even, you don't even have to know the precise product name, Google has, in all cases, in my experience, helped me find at least one instance of it. And also the other thing, too, so you go to Google, you type in the thing, and then you tab across, and you come to the pages where the links that will go to the pages that you want to go to. And there's no flash, there's no stuff that keeps resetting your page or anything like that, so it's quite easy on the access technology, I find. The other thing, of course, is once you've found a product, once you've zeroed in on something that you then want to buy, you can take that, get the right name of it, take that back to Google and say, okay, look for reviews, or put the name of the product, then a comma, then a space, and then review or reviews, and see if anyone's written about it. Chances are that people have written about this stuff on the net. One example that was a really nifty find this way was an ice cube solution. If there's one thing I cannot stand as a blind person, it's filling an ice cube tray, going back towards the fridge, misjudging exactly where that open fridge door is, hitting it, spilling the water all over the place, and having to mop up, you know, and clean that up. So I was very thankful after a number of notorious incidents like this to stumble across an ice cube tray that is different because it's like a bottle. You fill this thing with a little bit of water. You don't even really fill it up all the way, just so the divots in the bottom of it get full. And I wouldn't have been able to really, they had a description on it, but it wasn't great, so I just went looking for reviews on what it was called. And bingo, a bunch of blind people have used this, and you screw the cap onto it, so there's no way you're going to spill a bunch of water. The worst that's going to happen is you fill it too full, and you'll end up with ice that you can't remove and you have to let melt. But you know, other than that, it's a pretty perfect system, and I would not have known about it had I not gone online, used Google, looked for ice cube tray, comma blind, comma spill, just all the ideas of you know what I wanted to avoid and things, and it just tracked it down in fairly quick order.
I also use Google, and this is Mary, and one challenge with Google is you kind of have to know the terminology of what you want. Like recently I had to figure out the difference between a chair cushion and a chair pad. I think the pad is thinner and the cushion is thicker. It took me about 15 minutes to try to figure out what it was that I really wanted. And ice cube trays, another solution is the homemarketplace.com. They've got trays that actually have lids going across the tray. And I bought some of those, and they work very well also. But Google is a fabulous tool, and I couldn't agree with you more. It's just been really excellent as far as trying to find things. I'm into health foods, and I'm looking for things occasionally, and usually I ended up at the same place that I always tried, which was the vitaminshop.com, but I think I actually found that on Google when I was looking for something. So it's a great place to start if you're going to look for stuff.
This is Mika Paikala again, and I would just add, if you're doing Google searches, let's say, for instance, you want to buy something from Office Depot that you found, like, for instance, over the weekend, there was a $49 8-gig USB flash drive on blindbargains.com that was sold by Office Depot. So I did a search in Google for Office Depot coupon promotion code, and you'll get a whole page of hits with these various sites that track coupon and promotion codes for various merchants. So, for example, with Office Depot, right off the bat, I found a coupon code that you'd get a free set of butter cookies with your order and some other coupon codes for discounts at various order levels. But you won't get those unless you kind of dig that up and research it and find those either coupon codes, discount codes, or promotion codes, you know, depending on what each site calls them. But the bigger sites, if you just search for those terms in Google, often you'll come up with some useful results.
Doug Wakefield here. One of the things that comes up, of course, you hit the, because we use Google all the time also, and so it always comes back and it tells you, you know, there's could be anywhere from 1,000 to 2 million hits. And generally, if I don't find it in the first page or two, I go back and, as Mary said, reorganize my search and get down the right terms. Am I looking for a converter or an adapter? So you've got all these websites, and one of the things that's interesting is how do you know that the site is decent? We've never been burned that I can think of. I'm a little annoyed at Yankee Candle right now. I bought Judy a candle for her birthday 2 weeks ago, and I got a notice today saying it's still in the warehouse and they hope to ship in 2 more weeks. But that doesn't happen that often, and they're all sorry about it. But how do you know if you go to a site that it is a reputable site? I would like to just pass on a couple of tips. First of all, read it. Don't just tab through the links. Read it. Are there misspelled words? And it's amazing sometimes how many misspellings you'll find on a page. And you begin to wonder, how professional is this place? The other thing is really key that Judy always says is, can you find on that website an address and a telephone number for the company? And that's kind of crucial. If you can't, I wouldn't buy from them.
A couple of notes there, too, on that front, the whole issue of being burned. I have yet to experience anything like that. I do take precautions against that, mainly with just making sure that I can check my balance, my credit card balance, regularly and independently, so I can really make sure that nothing is happening that I don't know about. For checking authenticity of sites, there's a couple ways. First of all, again, Google. Look for what other people say about this place. If you don't know it right off the bat and you don't trust it, look at Google. Say, type in the name of the place and type comment or review, and chances are you'll find some write-ups on it in places. That's one really useful thing to do. For the most part, I've had pretty good luck. I've shopped for easily a decade anyway, and haven't really been burned or anything. It's been quite a good experience. I certainly know that it is possible. You can get defrauded and things, but very rare that happens. Just use common sense. Check the pages out. If you don't really know what you're after, stick to brand name places. Stick to like larger outfits until you really know what you're doing. In some cases, you can't. If you want to get accessible games, you have to go from the company that makes the game, and they're not too large, and they're individuals running these, so it comes down to that. But in general, keep a cool head, look through everything. Address and phone number, great idea. Check for that. Look for other people's comments on it. If people get burned, chances are they will write about it. They will blab somewhere. You will see a blog entry. You will see something. People vent their frustrations online, and a lot of places have really come under fire from that. So, keep an eye out for that. That'll very quickly steer you away from really large-scale fraud operations. The other thing is PayPal. If you can get a PayPal account, the only person who knows your information is PayPal. The end vendor doesn't. So once you have an account set up, you can use it in pretty widely across the internet and not have any worries about giving away your credit card information since it's going through PayPal, the service. So that's another really good way of just making double sure that should anything happen, you have some protection.
I want to ask the panel one other question just because it's been an issue in the past. There was a time when two things happened with Amazon.com, which I've heard a number of our panelists mention. One of them was Amazon.com created a site that they called their access site. I suspect that you guys are kind of like me. That site was more annoying than it was useful because it made choices about what information to include. But the other point that I wanted to have discussed is there was a time a year or two ago when Amazon did not work well with some access technology, and I'd like some of the panel, if you would, and if you can, to talk about whether that's really been cleared up. I guess what I heard was and what I experienced as well, was that it was sometimes very difficult to make choices using JAWS, and you would think you were selecting one thing, you'd end up selecting something else. So perhaps some of you could comment on the current state of Amazon.com in terms of accessibility.
Well, I've used Amazon.com/access ever since they came out with it, and generally I used it for music. And lately what has happened with that is when you go to Amazon.com/access, you come up on the top of the screen with the top five best-selling whatever category you happen to be in at the time, and then you go down below that and you can choose the category that you want, such as music, books, DVDs, whatever, and then you below that you can go down and type the thing that you're looking for and then push the go button or whatever that button is. And generally the problem that I come up with is once you get into the product description, it doesn't always tell you things like the user reviews or description of a product. It just depends on what the editorial people choose to put in at the time, and that's one of the big problems with Amazon.com access. If you go to the main Amazon.com website, however, it can be rather confusing because you've got a lot of stuff up there and it's very cluttered. And even with the Braille display and speech, it really can be messy because you think you're in one section, but you aren't really, and they've got stuff mixed up. It shows up in JAWS as different, and you don't know exactly what's going on with it unless you're extremely careful and you look on the site about three or four times to figure out, you know, what you're really looking at and picking. So with Amazon, I tend to just use the access category. And sometimes you can still go to Amazon.com/text, and the text will just give you the text, but it will still be a bit confusing. So it's kind of a hit and miss with Amazon. If I want to do something such as get some type of accessory or something, I usually go to someplace else like QVC or one of those sites, Home Marketplace or Office Depot or someplace. It depends, I guess, on what kind of mood the site's in that day or that week or who's been updating it. You never really know for sure what it is you're getting with that.
Paul, this is Mika again. As I said, I use Amazon quite a bit, and I would agree that the main site is very cluttered. That's, in fact, exactly how I would put it. I've mainly used the main site as opposed to the access site just because I want to see different deals and things, although I was looking at the access site tonight, and if you're searching for a discrete item that you know what it is, it may not be a bad solution. But as far as using the main site, what I do a lot is use the JAWS Find command, the Control F. So, for instance, when I pull up a product within Amazon.com, I'll often want to jump right to the description. So I'll search for DESCR. So Control F, DESCR, Enter, and then it can pretty quickly get you to the description.
That's excellent. Julie Bailey, who is also with us this evening, has left a text message that's interesting in that she says that the access component of Amazon is now also designed for use with cell phones. So the amount of text that's there is actually more limited than it used to be. And that's interesting. One of the approaches that I've taken in the past, it's sort of a workaround and it may be a kind of a long way to get to the barn, is I will actually go to the Amazon main site and take a look at the stuff that I want to know. And if I'm having trouble or I'm not sure that I'm getting the right thing, I will make a purchase and then make that purchase through the access site. And I've found that that's actually been a kind of a workaround. I'm sort of sorry to hear, because I guess I haven't bought anything on Amazon for the last year or so, I'm sort of sorry to hear that it seems as though there are still some issues with the main site. Cluttered I can deal with. Not getting clear information through JAWS I can't. Though it's fascinating to me and an indication of where we are with off-screen models that while I had those problems with JAWS, for the most part, Window Eyes didn't have the same issues on Amazon that JAWS had. So the other way of getting around some of this is using a different screen reader.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you're listening to Tuesday Topics. Once again, your host, Paul Edwards.
First, let me express my appreciation to the panel for getting us started and talking about a whole range of things. Let me open it up to see if folks have some questions or some other comments that they'd like to make about some of the things that they've found in terms of online shopping. So, take it away. If you have a question for the panel, please feel free to ask that as well.
In order to do online shopping, sometimes you need to do online banking. But the thing about that, I've tried that, but with my bank, I can't. There's a lot of graphics, so it's hard to read the information. It covers up the information I need to know about, and that is a problem. To do anything with that.
There are two things that I've discovered you should have at least one of for shopping. That's either a credit card or PayPal. You can tie PayPal directly into your bank account and then never even have to worry about it. It just automatically withdraws the money from your bank account. And if you don't have credit, I'm very fortunate to have had parents with the foresight to help me get a credit card. And that's really come in handy now that everything's available online. And as long as you take care of it, that's a pretty safe way of doing business for the most part. Basically, that would be my solution as it was. Get PayPal tied into your bank if that's possible. You might need a little sighted help to do that. I signed up so long ago that I can hardly remember what I had to do to get it. I think I might have had to get sighted help to get that account going at PayPal, and chances are they've improved it by this stage with all the talk about CAPTCHA and getting rid of it and all that's gone on. I can only imagine they've improved that by now. So that would be one idea to avoid the whole bank issue, I'd think. And then, of course, if you have a credit card, a lot of places you can just use that.
Well, thanks for that information. I'll have to check into that.
I'd like to just throw in one warning about PayPal. We know somebody who got burned badly, and not by PayPal, but for some reason, people, scammers, whatever you want to call them, have really latched on to using PayPal. And you'll get a notice in the mail saying, your PayPal account has been frozen. Please follow this link to whatever. And a friend of ours had just done some shopping using PayPal, and so he followed the link. And I can't remember what the dire results were, but he had to get a new credit card and everything else. So this is one of those, I will say very honestly, if PayPal, you think you're getting email from PayPal about your account, don't follow any links ever. Go straight to PayPal and look at it yourself. I wanted to add one other thing about security, and this doesn't have anything to do with not being able to see. This seems, as a matter of fact, I know many people with 20/20 that say this. I'm not about to put my credit card out on the Internet. And yet, the irony is that you'll go into any restaurant, you'll hand your credit card to somebody, and they'll disappear for 10 minutes. You could do a lot of online shopping in 10 minutes with somebody else's credit card.
I should have pointed that out myself earlier with PayPal. Definitely never, ever, and same with anything money-related or any banks, anything like that. If you get emails from them, always go to the site. Never, ever click on links in emails. I had one occasion where it really was from PayPal saying that I had to update my account privacy policy thing that they had updated. And I nearly got my account. They would have had to freeze activity because I didn't update it in time. And I just kept thinking it was spam because I erred on the other side of that thing. And eventually, finally, I thought, okay, maybe I should have a look at this. And I went to PayPal, and sure enough, your account requires that you read this policy and agree to it. And I did that, and then everything was fine. But always, always, always go directly to the site. It just, no bank or anyone like that is ever going to send you an email that demands that you follow that link from the email back to the site. They'll always want you to go to the site, log in, and then do what you have to do so they know that you're actually at the right place.
I got an email also from a spammer about, please give us your 4-digit PIN number so we can get into PayPal and change your account. And, of course, that was totally ridiculous to me, and I just threw it out.
Wonder if one of our panel would attempt to describe for our listeners exactly what PayPal is and why it has become as popular as it has online and how it differs from credit cards.
PayPal basically lets you give it access to your credit card so that it can draw directly from it, or you can have it go to a bank as well, or you can have a balance just on PayPal that you pay with checks that you mail to them. So there's a bunch of different ways to do it. And what it does is you can use that source of money through PayPal. And PayPal is a middleman. When you're paying for something, the merchant gets PayPal to pay that. It'll get your payment through PayPal. You won't pay that merchant directly. You'll pay using PayPal. There'll be a button on pages that use it. Pay secure with PayPal. It'll say something like that. And you can just click on that, and you might have to log in to your PayPal account and review your order and say pay now. There'll be a button called pay this much money to this merchant. It's very step by step. It's very hard to accidentally pay for something you don't want to. And so PayPal is a middleman, a third party in the deal. It's not just you and the merchants. It's you going through PayPal and therefore not giving the merchant who you're dealing with access to your personal credit card financial information.
With PayPal, do both sides of the transaction pay? Is so that PayPal makes money by essentially charging you, the PayPal user, a percentage and also charging the merchant a percentage? Does any of our panel know the answer to that question?
I know they get a commission. I believe it's from the merchant that you're doing business with. I've never noticed that I'm paying any more for something than I agreed to pay. So, and they don't seem to charge the consumer anything, but I would suspect that if a merchant decides to use PayPal, that they would then have to pay a commission. So it's on the merchant.
Doug Wakefield here. I had to pay extra once because the merchant said, if you want to use PayPal, then I've got to charge you such and such because that's what PayPal's going to charge me.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that I've seen as well. Let's see if other people have questions or concerns or perhaps other things they'd like to share with us.
This is Denise from Washington. Because you're out there online doing a lot of this shopping and you're putting your credit card out there and stuff, do you find that there are chances of getting increased spam mail as a result of doing that?
Not personally, no. I've yet to get much spam at all. Because of that, it's not at all.
Hi, this is Chris Schumacher in Dearborn, Michigan. They may ask you on some of the sites if you want to be on an email list to be advised of any deals that they have or whatever, but I've not noticed any increase in email. I'd like to say that one of the advantages that I see, you were talking earlier about a site like drugstore.com and how time-consuming it can be at first to go around and find everything you want. But once you do that and you start shopping on a site, it keeps track of the things that you have purchased in the past. So when you go on that site again, you can actually look at things that you've ordered previously and then just check a checkbox if that's what you want to order again. So as you use the site more, it speeds that whole process up. The other thing I found is that if you go on a site with a couple of ideas of things that you want to purchase, say I've done it on the Avon website, you got to watch with the shipping that there are some times where they will say $25 worth of items will get you free shipping. Well, if you don't have $25 worth of things on your list at that point, you can put them in a shopping bag and leave them there and leave your computer, and maybe a couple days later when you think of something else that you want, go back and that stuff is still there and you can keep adding. And hopefully the shipping will still be there, the free shipping. Now, I have had occasions, it just happened to me today, where they had free shipping over the weekend for $25 worth, I think, and today they did not. So it's those kinds of things where sometimes people will question, do I want to do online shopping and pay those shipping charges rather than buying locally in a store? If you watch those kinds of things where free shipping is there for a certain price range of items or whatever, you can do that. And that works out very well to be able to save some money.
One thing about shopping for groceries that I've had some frustration with is that ability to order well ahead of time. You can, of course, put in an order and say, I'd like it shipped on this day and specify the delivery time. And then you have all this time between that and the cutoff point when you can no longer change your order to change your mind. And that is a real double-edged sword because, of course, if you put in what you want, great, and you can close and walk away and that's what you have for that order. But it's always, oh, should I have done this? You can get niggling doubts, and it is so easy to go back and make those changes.
One other thing about groceries that's happened is when you do that online and you get your stuff, sometimes they don't happen to have what you need in the store. Maybe they have a different brand. And so the grocery site that I use, they have a substitution section when you're checking out, and you can define whether you want a different brand or you want a different size and the same brand. But sad to say, they don't have options like different product within the category in a different brand or same brand. It's kind of a catch-22, because if you want to do a lot of baking for the holidays, for example, and they don't have to happen to have the kind of thing that you want, then you're stuck if they're out because you don't always get anything substituted for the thing you ordered. So that's another little problem with online shopping.
Hi, this is Chris again. Has anybody noticed with the QVC website that I've not been on it very often, but I was on it the other day, and you can watch the QVC network now on your computer, and there's a lot of information that when you're watching it on television that goes across the screen, the price and the item number and so on and so forth, that they don't always repeat real often. And now if you watch it on your computer, I guess that's coming up on your computer screen. And from what I can see, that's pretty accessible. I use JAWS. So that's really kind of a neat thing. If you don't get the QVC cable channel in your area, you can still watch it. And that information for ordering, I guess, is popping up on the screen, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's talk for a minute, if we can, about other areas that people need to be concerned about. There are a lot of us who have kind of avoided online shopping because of myths. And one of the things that I've taken away from this program and from others that I've done is that online shopping does appear to be a pretty safe and a relatively straightforward kind of exercise. My question, though, is, Are there some other things that you would urge novice online shoppers to be careful about?
I would say the one thing that I do all the time is you go into forms mode in JAWS to fill out, make all of your choices, check your check boxes, type in your quantity of how many of a particular item you want. But before you go to that submit button, go out of forms mode, where you can arrow back up through, where you can see all of your choices and make sure that you've actually chosen what you want before you actually get down to that checkout button or submit button or make purchase or whatever.
For novices, until you're really comfortable with what you're doing, check before you go to the checkout, the final stage when you're actually going to purchase, just check through your cart. Make sure that what is in your cart is what you think is in your shopping cart. Before you actually finally submit an order, there'll be an opportunity. The sites, I don't think I've encountered any site that has not provided an opportunity, a last, you know, check over your order, make sure you everything's correct, and then go to the final submit order button. That seems to be pretty common practice.
Also, make sure that the quantity of the items that you're getting actually are the number of items you want. For example, there's some sites where there's a zero there, but the zero moves to the right if you type the number one, so the quantity ends up being 10. So be careful with that. Make sure that if you see a zero to the right of the one or something, just delete the zero and keep the one there.
Excellent. Perhaps people could talk about a site that they've shopped on for the first time in the past year. And for the moment, let's say one that actually seems to work pretty well.
Well, I've purchased the airline tickets from Northwest Airlines, Spirit Airlines. I go to Florida quite a bit, and Spirit Airlines is the one that is the cheapest from here. And I've had very good luck where you can do your seat assignment and all that kind of stuff right there online.
Well, one good site that I've recently discovered, quite recently actually, and was very surprised by, mp3fiesta.com. I've kind of was surprised at that name because I understood fiesta meant sleep in Spanish, and that would be kind of hard with MP3s going. But it's quite a good site. You can go there and basically order, search for artists and music, or browse categories and find the MP3s that you want. And you don't have to download whole albums. You can pick and choose the tracks, like the actual songs, and hear samples, the first 30 seconds, which isn't always is quite enough to give you a full idea of whether you like a song. I've bought some songs that I would, in hindsight, rather not have, but sounded good from their openings and sections. But other than that, everything's like pretty straightforward. You fill in from a credit card or whatever. You can fill up your balance. And then basically you spend like roughly 10 cents a track, and you can just basically download. You're given 48 hours to download what you purchased before it disappears. So basically it activates links on a special downloads page for you. That'll be good for 2 days, and you can grab the MP3s, and they're yours after that. You can just do whatever with them. But those links will no longer be valid after 2 days. There's the button that you have to say submit. It's just called two button. I don't know why they did that, but you hit that, and then it will move all the tracks to your downloads. It'll tell you how much you spent, and for that operation, then you have to do okay, and then it'll go through. That's the thing. A lot of these smaller places like this, be sure to give it some time to check it out. Sometimes it might look on first glance worse than it is. It can be very simple to work out some of the little quirks with these sites. And there's a lot of small-time stuff. I can't emphasize that enough. If you want online audio dramas, some games that are accessible, a lot of things that are just you can't find anywhere else but online, it's really worth pursuing. It's really worth finding out how these sites work to find this stuff.
Just for the record, Michael, Fiesta in Spanish, F as in Frank, I-E-S-T-A, is party. And siesta, S as in Sam, I-E-S-T-A, is sleep. So your MP3s are intended to be used at parties, not during naps, sir.
Ah, well, I sit correct.
This is Denise. Probably the two that I've shopped at most often is either A&E or the History Channel, buying videos of things that we want to have, and the only music one that I've really shopped on is CD Connection, because I found it to be probably the most user-friendly and the most accessible, or the easiest for me to try to figure out how to use.
CD Universe is another very good one. Probably one of the biggest and yet most accessible sites, and I know that Paul had hoped to have somebody talking about it tonight, is eBay. We've done a lot of shopping. We win, we lose, but... there is a truly easy, accessible site.
Some other ideas in terms of sites, please, that people have tried and would recommend.
Well, I've got a few. One is MWAVE, MWAVE.com. It's a great place to buy computer components. And I can say that in the last year I've bought quite a few things from them and never had any problems. Also, SEES.com sees candy is terrific for the holidays. And BatteryMart.com, that's M-A-R-T at the end, is a great place to get batteries. These places were recommended from various email lists that I was on, so I knew that other people had used them, and they're just really great.
Paul, let me just throw out one thing here. As we were listening to you, as Judy said, complicated or complex doesn't mean inaccessible. Sometimes people get a little bit overwhelmed, mm-hmm. But I think the remark was made, and I don't remember what it was, Mary or who, said that at first it might be usable or... Hold on. Do you want to say something?
The control key. I'm sorry, I was looking for the control key to hold it down.
I'm holding it down.
Oh, okay. The
about eBay, the point I wanted to make is if you pay attention to the heading, they have different things at different heading levels, heading 2 and heading 3. And if you've searched for an item and then do a couple of heading 2s until you get to all the heading 3s, and every item that's found starts with a heading 3. So you can go through it really fast.
And that only emphasizes it, is that, yeah, the first time a site may look complicated. If you ask for the summary of the page, it may say it has 3,629 lines, 8,000 whatever, and you say, oh, my Lord. But as soon as you learn it and you navigate it, when you go back, you know where you're going, and you use your search function to get there. Many of the airlines sites are usable. Yes, they do have some access problems at times, but Judy and I do all of our stuff generally on Expedia, or we will go to a different site like Orbitz or actually United. One thing I'll throw in, and that is that lots of times if you're not sure what the website's name is, you could either do a Google search for the name of the company, but it's also amazing how often you can just type in www.ibm.com, or, and I'm, obviously that's an easy one, but most companies that works. All right, I have to give you the absolute worst site I've ever seen. And this is one that I am using whenever I do any trainings right now with webmasters, because I hope they don't fix it. It is www.curvesfoods. You know about, I'm sure the women know about Curves. And they have a website, www.curvesfood.com. And it is absolutely the most inaccessible page you'll ever, ever see.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think one of the things that we've discovered this evening is that there are a larger and larger cohort of brave souls in the blindness community who are now online shopping on a regular basis. I think we've also discovered that, for the most part, it does not seem to be as difficult as it used to be. That is, more and more of us seem to be giving online shopping a pretty clean bill of health. I'd like to thank the four folks who were our primary guests for the first part of the program. Doug Wakefield, Mika Paikola, Michael Fair, and Mary Emerson. Thank you to all four of you for being our intrepid online shopping panel. And thanks to all of the others who had wonderful questions and really interesting comments to intersperse as well. Thanks, finally, to listeners to our online shopping program on ACB Radio. Without you around, I suspect they'd throw me off the air rather quickly. So thank you very much for listening, and good night.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday at 2 hours Universal. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each program begins, those who are online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room software. An announcement about the show, including information about the topic and the guest speaker, will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends List. So we hope you will come and join us each week on Tuesday, when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. We'll look for you in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. Tuesday Topics is a production of ACB Radio Mainstream.